You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, 41% of Americans now say they often or sometimes avoid the news. We'll find out why many are tuning out and what it means for the media, as well as the health of our democracy. First, the digital streaming world is getting ready for another shakeup. Disney, Apple, AT&T, and NBC Universal are some of the companies that are launching their own streaming services in the next year. That means popular titles like The Office, Friends, and the Marvel Cinematic Universe would be reclaimed by their parent companies, and if we want to keep watching them, it might take an extra subscription or two. Companies are hoping those high-profile titles convince users that more services are worth it. Edmund Lee covers the media industry for the New York Times. Ed, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
Well, it seems like these streaming services are just mushrooming, Ed. We're seeing this huge growth. What's going on?
Well, basically, what these big media companies are seeing is that fewer people are paying for television, cable, satellite TV, which has been growing for decades and decades, but it started to contract, you know, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, where people either dropped their cable bill or lowered their cable bill in favor of things like Netflix, right, which was relatively cheap. And so as this trend started going on, Disney and Time Warner, which is now part of AT&T, and others basically say, you know what, the future is in what they call direct consumer, what we know as streaming. So they're now saying, hey, look, we own all this content. Let's sell it to people directly instead of through these third parties like cable and satellite providers.
When there was just one big streamer like Netflix, that's one thing. Then you had some Hulu and then Amazon Prime. Are consumers going to be faced with some tough choices as more and more of these things come on the market?
That's a great question. I mean, with more of these things coming on the market, you could conceivably see people paying for 4 or 5 or 6 different streaming services. All of a sudden, you've got a cable bill all over again. Of course, each service is relatively cheap on its own. But if you want to sort of see the range of things you're used to seeing, you might end up having, you know, 4 or 5 of these services. Each one costs, on average, somewhere around $10 a month. And so all of a sudden, on top of an internet bill or a broadband bill, which is somewhere around $40 or $50 a month, you might be paying another $40 or $50, and it's $100. So if you really want to economize, which is the point originally, you're not going to be able to have all of these services. Otherwise, you just sort of defeat the purpose and you're paying for cable all over again.
With Netflix, part of the appeal for people was you could watch a lot of different stuff, TV shows, movies from a lot of different producers. Are we going to start seeing shows and movies disappear from Netflix so that they go back to their walled gardens for the companies that created them?
Yeah, you mentioned at the top of the segment of things like the Marvel Cinematic Universe, which is owned by Disney. You're seeing some of that on Netflix right now, but that's going to go away after this year. Disney service is going to launch around November, and as these sort of rights roll off of services like Netflix, you'll only be able to watch them on Disney. Same with The Office, which will go to NBC Universal streaming service next year, and Friends, which it was just announced today that AT&T, the parent company of Time Warner, will hold it back for its streaming service, which they're now calling HBO Max. So we're sort of entered this phase of what, you know, people call a content cold war, where, you know, the owners of the content are keeping them off of other services just for their own streaming play.
And what gets weird is we hear a name like AT&T is doing it. Well, AT&T, I don't think of them as a content producer. Or Disney, you think of Mickey Mouse and princesses. These companies own a lot of different media properties, right?
Exactly. There's a whole wave of consolidation that happened last year in particular. AT&T, you know, bought Time Warner. They've renamed it Warner Media. But Time Warner has, you know, HBO and Turner and Warner Brothers Film Studios, a whole host of content that sits behind it. Disney owns Marvel, Lucasfilm, Pixar. And then it went after 20th Century Fox, which is part of Rupert Murdoch's empire. He sold it off mostly. Disney won that. And this was all sort of as a preface to this sort of streaming that's starting now, which is, you know, once upon a time, there used to be content producers on one side and content distributors on another, and they sort of sold back and forth. Now it's like I own the content and I distribute it. And that's where this sort of cold war is happening.
Talking to Edmund Lee from the New York Times about a growth in the number of streaming services available. You may have to pick and choose more if you want to watch different TV shows and movies and maybe pony up another monthly subscription fee. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you subscribe to 1 or 2 or 5 streaming services? Are you steering clear? Have you dumped cable? Do you want to go back to cable? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. Ed, is that one possible outcome? People see this growing list of streaming services and say, maybe cable wasn't so bad after all?
I think there are definitely some who might think, maybe I'll just keep my cable bill, especially if it's got the basic channels, where a lot of these shows are kind of available. Like Friends is an interesting example. It's been on Netflix for years, but if you live in the New York area where I do, and my cable provider's Charter, we have a bunch of stations that air Friends, and I'm sure it happens all over the country, in syndication, right? So every night around 11 o'clock, Friends shows up on two or three different networks, and you can just sort of watch it any time, almost every night. Meanwhile, a lot of younger people who don't have any cable, they're tuning into Friends through Netflix, specifically, every night. They're sort of doing their own programming. So in a weird way, it's sort of they're just replicating what's already happening. It's sort of this parallel universe. Of course, Netflix is cheaper than even a cheaper cable bundle. But it's becoming a tough choice. I think Netflix still has a certain advantage right now, just given that it was the first streaming service, at least the first one of any real note. And it's just harder for people to give up the thing that they first had.
Are we going to see everybody try to come up with a killer app? HBO will have their Sopranos or Game of Thrones that gets people to pay to subscribe to that. CBS said, hey, there's a new Star Trek series, but it's only streaming. You have to pay and get all our other stuff with that. Is that going to be a goal, that one show for a lot of these guys that drags people in?
And that's the thing. I think that's a right way of putting it. I think the killer show becomes the killer app, right? There's that one thing that you can't live without, that you have to watch. I think in the case of HBO, as you mentioned, Game of Thrones has been that thing. And I think for a lot of viewers, they're anticipating the next Game of Thrones or next Game of Thrones type of show from HBO. So, yeah, fine, I'll pay for this HBO Max thing where I get HBO plus all these other things. AT&T, they're investing in other original content specifically for the streaming service that you may not see in syndication on cable or anywhere else or ever in the theater. So that is a newer phenomenon as well, which is, instead of it something that you sort of once saw, you can only ever see it originally on streaming, and they're developing content specific and native to these new streaming services. It's just going to get more complicated, and I think it will become more difficult for consumers. Again, if there's that one show from HBO and that one show from Netflix and that one show from Amazon you have to have, you're locking yourself into at least three services, and then you sort of might hit that limit. You're like, okay, now I can't afford anything else, or I don't want to pay for anything else, and you sort of live in that universe.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Brad is with us in Saukville. Brad, hi.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. What do you think?
Actually, the gentleman you're with just nailed it on the head. I mean, NBC and then they all want to do these subscription services, but let's be honest here, besides The Office and maybe one or two other shows, there's not much out there. So I'm not going to pay $10 to $15 a month for one, maybe two shows at best. Netflix and Amazon Prime. Disney, I can understand. Disney's got, like you said, Lucasfilm, Marvel Cinematic, the movies, the TV shows, and then the 20th Century Fox now that they've acquired. They've got a plethora of database that they could delve into. But you've got companies like NBC, Fox, I think CBS has a subscription service now. And it's so for one or two shows, it's not worth it. I'm going to stick with Netflix, Amazon Prime, maybe Disney when it comes out, because I hear they're only like $8.
Brad, thanks for the call. Brad sees winners and losers coming in this streaming war, Ed.
Yeah, I think he sort of outlined for us like what the calculation is for a lot of consumers, what's worth it. I'm generally curious to know for any of the callers who come in, like what if they have a cap or a limit on how many streaming services that they feel make sense for them. Chances are they might have a Netflix account already, or maybe they're an Amazon Prime customer and they get video with that. So you probably already have the two. Are they looking for one or two others? Is three or four the limit? I'm just curious where people sort of land on that, because if you know ahead of time, if you're budgeting ahead of time, decide, you know what, I think four streaming services is about where my limit is, both budget-wise and just sort of, in terms of the amount of content I know I'll actually consume, what's that third or fourth service? Or what are these four services that they're anticipating buying into? I think just from a reporter standpoint, I'm curious to know where those limits are.
Talking to Ed Lee right now. He covers the media industry for the New York Times. We're looking at what the digital streaming world could look like with a lot of new services coming online. Disney, Warner, NBC, Apple. Back to your calls now. Christina is with us in Glenwood City. Christina, hi.
Hi there. Thank you. This is very timely for me. We were just talking about dumping our satellite. So with these changes, can you suggest an economical and varied package? And also, how does Amazon Prime fit in?
Thanks for the call, Ed. I don't know if you have consumer tips, but any thoughts for Christina?
No, it's a great question, of course. If you're a first-time sort of, you know, cord cutter is what they call it, even if you have satellite, I think for a lot of consumers, Netflix seems to be the sort of first choice. It started out relatively inexpensive. It's gone up in price. It's around $12 now for their standard plan. I think there's a slightly cheaper one at $8. The difference in price has to do with how many simultaneous streams you can do. So if you have, you know, multiple TVs or laptops and iPads at home and you want, you know, three or four people watching the service at the same time, you want to spring for the sort of the standard service, which gives you a few simultaneous streams, even if it's slightly more expensive. It's more convenient. To the Amazon Prime question, so what's interesting is they've bundled in their video service. They have a lot of original video and also video that's just available for streaming through Amazon Prime. The thing is, you're buying not into the video service so much as you're buying into their delivery service, right? So if you are a Prime member, whenever you buy anything on Amazon or for most items, they'll ship it to you at 2 days for no cost or no extra cost. So being a Prime member, I think it's about $120 a year. So, you know, that breaks out to somewhere, whatever it is, $11, $12 a month. I think that's, you know, that's effectively the cost of what you'd be paying into for a video subscription. If that's really all you care about, then you get the added benefit of the delivery thing. Those seem to be the two sort of strongest players right now. Hulu is also a nice option. They have an ad-supported product that's about $6 a month. So it's actually pretty inexpensive. You have to watch ads alongside that. But I think for most people who have that say that it's fine. Lastly, I do think that the Disney service that's forthcoming, mailed in November, you know, they price it very competitively. It's about $7 a month. If you pay a year in advance, it ends up being less than $6 a month. And that's actually that's a nice deal relative to the other streaming services that are out there. HBO is the most expensive. It's $15 a month. When they launch this new service under AT&T with the other content, it'll be at least $15, if not slightly higher. So that's going to be more of a calculation for consumers. But I think to start, Netflix, Amazon seems to have the strongest backing, at least right now.
Christina, thanks for the call. Good luck with the decision. We'll go now to Paul on the line in Milwaukee. Paul, hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Your guest had asked how many services somebody was willing to take, and I'm planning on having Prime and one other, and what I'll probably do is follow them all on social media and then cancel one and add another one when I have something new to binge. So I'll only pay for two at a time, but as long as they're going to let me pay monthly, I'll just pick the one that has something I want that month and cancel it at the end of the month.
Paul, thanks for the call. So serial monogamy with his streaming services, Ed.
So the caller describes a phenomenon that is actually unique to streaming, and I think a lot of people are doing exactly what he's doing, which is, you want to sort of, there's a show that you really want to watch, say it's Game of Thrones. We talked about how HBO is the most expensive. You can buy HBO online, it's called HBO Now, where you only get HBO, and then you can cut it after a month or two, right? So you're getting billed on a month-to-month basis, and that's starkly different from how cable companies have long operated, which is, you're not so much into a contract, but you're paying a high fee every month. When you want to cut it, they make it really difficult, and they need to send someone to your house, and they might even charge you for that sort of whole operation. When Netflix came along with streaming, they actually made it very, very easy for people to turn on and off their subscription, and people have been doing that. Well, they pay for 1 month, watch a few things, cut it off, and then restart their service a few months later or a month later. So all the other streaming players that have come into the marketplace now, they've sort of had to follow Netflix's lead. So if you got HBO through your cable provider, it might be harder to turn it on and off. If you got HBO directly online through their HBO Now service, it's easier to turn it on and off. And I think, you know, that's a phenomenon we'll see more and more, especially as there are these more services coming into the fray. I think some of the services now, though, in an effort to cut that off, might sort of get you into a yearly plan, right? We mentioned Disney earlier. If you buy a year in advance, it's a little bit cheaper, you know, about $6 a month or less. So that might be a way to prevent that. But I do think a lot of people will be doing the turning things on and off, the serial monogamy, so to speak.
Paul, thanks a lot for calling in. We are talking about the growth of streaming services. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Edmund Lee is with us from the New York Times. Back to your calls. Kristen is with us in Winona, Minnesota. Kristen, hi.
Hi.
What's your story, Kristen?
So basically, I do have Netflix, and I do have Prime, mainly for the reason of the free shipping. I do not have a TV at all. I only watch on my phone, and I only watch for about a half an hour to an hour a week. I simply just find better things to do with my time.
Kristen, thanks for the call. Are these streaming services pitching toward people who watch like Kristen does on her phone, Ed?
I think Kristen's actually a bit of an outlier. I think she represents the future. I think especially younger folks tend to just sort of watch on their phones. But, you know, as an example, like Netflix, they found that 60% or more of the viewing that happens on their service happens on a big screen TV or a TV of some sort. The rest of the time, it could be on a laptop or an iPad or a phone. But they see that the bulk of their viewing still happens on a big screen. And, you know, they spend a lot of money for productions that have sort of big screen capabilities with, you know, sort of special effects and explosions. Stranger Things, which is their one of their big plays, has a lot of special effects, and I think plays well on a big screen. At the same time, I do think the future or the near future is people just watching things on their phone or watching less. And I think they're all trying to anticipate that to some degree and maybe develop content that fits that idea.
Kristen, thanks a lot for the call. Edmund, I want to talk a little more about original content. It seems like some of these new players, including Apple, are going to be putting a lot of money trying to get big-name producers, directors, and stars in the stuff that they make to show on their streaming service.
Yeah, no, that's a good question. Apple is sort of still of a mystery to a lot of us in terms of exactly what their larger strategy is. They're spending anywhere from $1 billion to $2 billion a year to develop this content. That's a lot of money, but relative to, say, Netflix, which is spending $10, $12, $15 billion a year, it's much smaller. The difference with Apple relative to these other streaming services is that I think Apple, in many ways, is trying to be more like a cable provider in that what they want is a unified interface where you as a consumer can sort of pick and choose. You can sort of buy into a CBS all-access streaming service or, you know, ideally they wanted Netflix, but Netflix is not participating. But like CBS or HBO or any of these other streaming services that are coming soon, and they just want to own the interface to sort of whet people's appetites and get them used to it. They will also have original content that is specific to Apple, but it's not going to be a ton of stuff. I mean, a dozen shows maybe or even two dozen shows is not quite enough to justify a full-on streaming service on its own. And they might even make that part free to Apple customers. So if you own an Apple device, you might be able to watch this stuff for free. But at the same time, they want to upsell you into subscribing to these other third-party services like HBO or CBS. They will get a small cut of that. But ultimately, they just want to own the interface.
Let's bring on another caller now. Drew is with us in Deerfield. Drew, hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to like the topic a lot, but as far as like the bills go or the how many services you would like set the limit to, I know in our household we don't have any cable or anything like that. We just do all the streaming, and we don't really set it to an amount of apps as to what the bill comes out to, as long as it's cheaper than cable. Also, the other one that seems to be a pretty good app is Hulu. I think the host mentioned that just because it hosts or has a lot of the current shows from a lot of the basic channels. But then I think up to new channels being starting their own streaming service, I wonder how many of those are actually going to be retained.
Drew,
that's about it, though.
Thanks a lot for the call. So Drew and his family set a budget. As long as they come out cheaper than the cable would have been, they're okay with it, Ed.
No, that's a smart way to think about it. And I think you can still get three or four of these streaming services end up being under what a basic cable service might be. The caller had a question about Hulu. Mm-hmm. I think Hulu is another interesting example. They're all playing in slightly different modes here. Hulu, they're known for what they call like next day content. So stuff you might see on your broadcast networks like NBC, ABC, NBC and ABC, you know, these shows would then appear on Hulu the next day. And if you pay the $6 a month, you're seeing ads next to it. There's a higher priced one about $12 a month, and you don't see any ads at all. we should note that Hulu is now actually controlled by Disney. So Disney actually, they've been doing a lot of these M&A deals in the last year. Hulu came part of this whole, you know, Fox deal that they did. And so now Disney will have Disney Plus, which is its own streaming service with all its the movies that we know that they own, but then also Hulu, which will have a lot of the TV content that you might see from the broadcasters. Now, because it's now controlled by this one entity, you know, a broadcaster like NBC, which is owned by Comcast, might be less willing to sell its content to Hulu and might want to keep it for its own service. So again, it's going to get even more complicated going forward. Not a good answer to the caller's question right now, but you know, we have to wait and see as to where those things end up shaking out. And it all comes down to sort of the big corporate media guys pulling the strings. What's better for their own streaming service versus the other?
Thanks a lot for that call, Ed. In just a few moments, what is the next big thing you're watching out for when it comes to this streaming chaos?
So Disney's coming out in November. Apple is supposed to come out around the same time, maybe a little bit more. The big thing for me right now is that AT&T service, which is HBO Max, I mean, we still don't know how they're going to price it. They're going to launch it early next year, and HBO is still a big player and draws a lot of consumer interest, but how they price it will make a big difference. Chances are it's going to be $15 or more, and it'll be a tough call for them, but that's what I'm looking for, because that's what consumers will ultimately be reacting to, what it costs.
Ed, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Sure, anytime.
Edmund Lee covers the media industry for the New York Times. He talked with us about how new streaming services coming online this year could shake up the way we watch stuff.